Welcome to the Barbell Strikes Back. I'm James McDermott, and Josh Heller is joining me on the show again for part two of Simple Nutrition. Josh, how you doing?
I'm all right. A little fatigued from yesterday, but I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, you did a retest of 23.1 CrossFit Open workout.
I did.
Did it go the way you wanted to?
It did. It didn't on Friday, but it did today. It did yesterday. So, I'm happy with it.
Do you think, is it going to be, are you planning on redoing each one?
No.
Like, are you going to get like stuck in this this cycle of redoing Friday, Monday?
Yeah, I wasn't planning on redoing this one. But honestly, the gain that I made from like score wise, minimal. Because I went from getting 21 cleans out of the 30 to getting all 30 cleans, still no muscle ups because I don't have those. So the gains were not terribly appreciable, but when I went into the workout, I expected of myself to at least get through everything I'm able to get through. And when I looked back on it and reflected, I was like, I didn't do that. And I think I can. And so that's why I did that. It's more for me.
For me. Hey, it's okay for it to be for you.
Yeah. I'm happy with it. And I would have done it if I didn't do it yesterday. I would have done it probably another time by myself just to be able to do that.
Was it an issue of strategy or did you just didn't have it on Friday or both?
It was strategy for sure. Specifically with the toe, I went a little bit too hot on the rower. So I pulled back a little bit there. The toes to bar, my strategy was all wrong and cost me pretty much everything. Because I shaved off.
I like how you say it. Sounds so yeah, serious. Right? It cost me everything.
I shaved off about a minute and a half on the toes to bar themselves, and that allowed me to the wall ball was whatever, about the same, and the cleans, close your eyes and move.
Yeah, just do singles.
Yeah, which I did, which is what I did last time. I just ran out of time. So it was definitely. Strategic, 100% strategic.
What was the strategy?
So my strategy on Friday was I was trying to do sets of five, and unfortunately I was unable to keep that. 50 is a lot. That's a big number. And so by about 15 or 20, the fives became threes, became twos. I failed on a couple of them, and the rest became unwieldy. Whereas yesterday I did singles the entire time. I jumped up, swung, kicked, dropped down, took a step back, got in position and did it again. And just, no rest, just kind of motored my way through. And that was definitely for this particular workout, the better. And we've talked about, is that something I would have done if this was a regular, Monday workout? No, I would try to string them together, string fives or tens or whatever, but that's not what this is. This is
open
and strategy is, it has a place. And I think
this is a competition. Strategy has a place in any workout. Like you have to think about how you're going to break it up. But in this situation, this is a very easy path, a dark path to go down where you start to become the quote competitor.
Yeah.
And then every workout turns into an open wad where you're gaming it to the point on, well, if I can do singles every time, then that'll shave off time it takes me to do them and I can get to other things. But it's like, yes, but what about the quality of your toes to bar?
Absolutely.
Eventually you need the capacity to string together threes and fives or tens, and you will never get there doing singles, and you literally game yourself out of fitness.
100%. Like I said, if this was a regular workout on a regular, Monday, then I wouldn't have done that. It may have devolved to singles eventually, but it would that would not have been a strategy. It just would have been reality. But for something like this, I did some reading, I watched some videos and people were saying that that's probably your best bet for that. And it was definitely helpful. It definitely saved me some time. And, for that particular workout on that particular day for this particular open, it was worthwhile. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, it's also the open workouts are a way to evaluate your fitness, right? It's a test.
Absolutely.
It's a yearly test. So now you have this hole in your game when it comes to toes to bar.
Yep.
I mean, the cleans, everybody in the world did singles. Most people are going to do singles. That's just part of that workout, unless you're just one of the beast out there. The rower, okay, we went too hot out of the rower, but you're a strong rower. So that was just a tactical error. Wall balls, yeah, they are what they are. And you're tall and strong, yeah, so they're whatever, get through them. But you have this one little thing. Actually, you have two things. You got the wall ball, or excuse me, the toes to bar that needs work. It's improved a lot over the last few years. But you're seeing where it needs a little bit of work, maybe a little volume training, maybe every minute on the minute, string together sets of three, sets of five, sets of four even, just build up your capacity. But then there's the muscle up, Josh.
Yeah.
We got to get you a muscle up.
Yeah, I know. That's you're 100% right. Now, in yesterday, I had 10 seconds between when I finished the cleans to when I needed to muscle up. So physically, besides the fact that I don't have it, that was not going to get there. I finished at 1350 and then fell on the floor.
Yeah.
But, yep, we're good. I'm out.
All right. Well, we know what we need to work on. So,
yes, for hey, sure.
Luckily, sure. We've been working on a little muscle up progression in our in-person coaching meeting. So that's something
it's coming. It's coming.
You should be doing. You should be doing the boxer pose progression often, once a week, it's coming. At least. All right, let's dive into nutrition here. So last week, we talked about part one and part two of this five video series on nutrition that was done by Coach E.C. Sinkowski. It's on the CrossFit Journal. It was posted on January 19th, 2017. And this is a great place for coaches and athletes alike to kind of start if you have no idea on anything with nutrition. You're like, how do I talk to clients or athletes? What kind of information should I know for my future studies? Or just even an athlete, just to know this stuff for yourself and then seek out future guidance. I think this video series is fantastic. It's a great place to start. She does a great job on using the first two sentences of the 100 Words of Fitness written by Greg Glassman and breaks them down as a way to organize this presentation, which I'll just say it again. The first two sentences of the 100 Words of Fitness are eat meat and vegetables, nuts and seeds, some fruit, little starch, and no sugar. Keep intake levels that will support exercise, but not body fat. So this is two sentences that she does a deep dive, 7 to 8 minutes per video. The last one's like 12 minutes. And you're going to know the really important stuff that you should consider with your training. If you're someone who wants to improve in the open, your scores are worse this year than they were the previous year, you did a retest and your performance went down, this is where you should be checking. You should be checking your nutrition. And your coach should be thinking as well, well, was it the strategy? Was it, you know, the what we did earlier in the week for other workouts, or does this nutrition play a huge role in it? And it does.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's no question about it. It's funny. I was having a conversation with a coworker of mine, and we'll get into this a little later, but she was, you know, talking about how she wants to start working out again and mentioned the reason why. She's like, I want to lose some weight. And I was like, all right, well, you got to understand working out is super great and important, but in isolation, is it going to help you lose weight? The answer is more often than not, no, it's not, unless this is part of it. Unless there's a nutrition component of it. It's that important. You know, think like, oh, I go into the gym and I work out hard. Great. How hard do you work out for? How long do you work out for? So for me, I work out 5 to 6 days a week for an hour, maybe a little bit more. Sometimes I do a little accessory work, but let's say an hour. So let's say 6 days a week, which is my kind of my max week. That's 6 hours out of how many hours are in a week? I actually don't know the answer to that.
Hold on. I got a calculator right here.
24.
Well, I thought you were going to go with the day example, but you went week. You went for the big one. It's 168 hours.
168 hours. And you just spent six of them working out. That's 162 hours that you didn't do that. And yeah, you can look at it and say there are 24 hours in a day and I just spent one. What am I doing the other 23? But you're not going to work out every day either, nor should you really. And so now you're looking at 162 out of 168. And what percentage is that? I think it's about 3%. That's 3% of your entire week you're spending working out. And that's if you're working out for an hour, six times a week, which when you're starting out may not be the best idea either. Might be a little bit too much. So, you know, while working out is important, it's extremely important. Obviously, it's, you know, we love it. It's what we do. And it has so many benefits beyond that. if your goal, and a lot of people, when they come to the gym for the first time, that's their goal. I want to get in shape. I want to lose some weight. Awesome.
There's a wedding in 4 weeks that I got to get down 12 pounds. I've met a lot of people like that.
Working out by itself in isolation is probably not going to do that. It can help. And it can help make better decisions when you're having a more healthy lifestyle. Absolutely. And then there's the mental, you know, the emotional benefits of it, which can also help, you know, when it comes to nutrition, because that's something we really don't get into too much here because we really can't. All the, you know, we talk about how complicated it is, but that doesn't get into, you know, the emotional reasons why we eat, the, you know, the, you know, how are we doing in our lives? Why are we eating the way we're eating? You know, it's one thing to say, this is how I should be eating, but why am I not? Well, maybe I'm going through a really stressful time right now. Maybe something's going on in my life right now. Emotional, you know, the emotional aspects of eating are that are tied to eating. It's, I mean, it's unbelievable.
That scene with, have you seen Austin Powers, right?
Sure.
Part number two with the very large assassin. I was going to quote him and I was like, well, maybe not. Like it popped in my head. I was like, well, that'd be fun to do. But yeah, everything, well, one, I'm very proud of myself for bringing this Texas Instrument calculator over here. Cause there was a moment where I was at the table and I was like, am I gonna need this? And we're talking about zone and stuff. And I just brought it. So a little pat on my back, figure that out. But everything that you're saying is why you need a coach and why you need a support system around you, you know, to give you that advice. Hey, let's start training 3 to 4 days per week. And we're going to have something different to do on each of those days. And on your off days, maybe you go for a walk, you know, because I don't think there's anything wrong with moving every single day.
We were
meant to move, but you don't need to do 23.1 or something like that in that intensity every single day.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Especially
not when you're starting out, because if you do, you won't last.
Yes. And I know this can be hard now because you see a lot of like influencers, social media influencers, who do crazy things like that. You know, someone who's like, I'm going to do Murph every day for 30 days. Cool. That's a great YouTube video that you made.
Yep.
Hopefully people don't decide to do what you're doing because this is not going to work out for those people. And I would hope in that video, you're showing all of the things that you're doing to recover from that with your nutrition and your stretching and your whatever other things you're doing, Normatec pants, sauna, just to be able to survive.
Besides the fact you should go over how you got to where you are when you're starting. Because you're not waking up day one and being like, yeah, I think I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do Murph for a month.
You should start the video with like, look, I'm different. I'm pretty phenomenal. I've been doing this for 20 years. I've competed at Wadapalooza and I used to go to regionals. I was a competitive athlete in high school and college for sports. And I've got this engine and I can deal with pain differently than other people. I'm used to feeling beat up. And I'm also just going to do this because I don't have a full-time job. This is my job. I'm going to monetize this video.
People like, I'm going to do 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 states. Like, good for you. That's great. But that's no one you shouldn't know.
Yes. How much does a marathon cost? Do you know? Like how much does it cost to a race?
If you get it like ahead of time, like a decent amount ahead of time, $150 to $200.
So let's say 150. I'm using my calculator now. For in all 50 states, so that's $7,500 in marathon fees.
Just fees, yeah. But 50 cool t-shirts. 50 cool t-shirts.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. You get a cool t-shirt.
And all the bananas you can eat.
And you know, I get it. Like you live life, do amazing things. Do what you want to do. Do what makes you happy. Do something where you're going to be, you know, 80 and be like, yeah, I did that. I ran 50 marathons. My grandkids might not, but I did. And it's a cool story to tell.
Yeah.
But not everybody can afford that much money in registration fees, let alone the time away from work, the time to travel, and all the food and fuel you're going to have to do that. So this is a very expensive endeavor. And fitness and health and nutrition doesn't have to be expensive. And there is investment. There's going to be investment, but you're going to put a little bit of investment now. So you're not paying big time later down the road in huge medical fees, because it's a lot more expensive to go to the doctor multiple times than to go to the gym on a regular basis. Those doctor bills can add up very, very quickly.
That is true. That they do.
So let's do a little recap. We spoke last time for video one about macronutrients, micronutrients, nutrient density, and nutrient synergy. I'll link our last talk in the show notes for this study. So if anyone hasn't listened to it, you can go back and listen to that one first, because some things that we talk about going forward might sound a little foreign. Macronutrients, we know these: proteins, fats, and carbs.
Yep.
Micronutrients, there's a lot of them. Nutrient density, we want to eat foods that have a lot of macro and micronutrients per calorie of food source. So you're eating a piece of steak versus a protein shake, which may not have everything that the steak has in it. Then we have nutrient synergy, which nutrient synergy is better and more beneficial to get minerals and vitamins from whole food sources, where they come together versus isolated forms like supplements. So that's the gist of video one, like in a really just straight shot right through it. And then we did talk a little more about protein, how we need that because it's the building blocks for our tissues and helps with metabolic processes. We also talked about fat, which I think the fat conversation, or just the topic of fat, is super interesting.
It is, yeah.
Especially when you divide up the different types. You have saturated fat and unsaturated fat.
I mean, we talked about how you can kind of go down a rabbit hole here a little bit, right? You have your macros, so there's three: proteins, fats, carbs. You have your fats, which there's two: the saturated and the unsaturated. You have your unsaturated, which are two: monounsaturated, the polyunsaturated. You have your polyunsaturated, which you can break into two, which is the omega-6s and the omega-3s. And then you have your omega-3s, which you can break down into twos, and your DHAs and your EPAs. I mean,
and now your head's spinning.
I think this podcast is entitled, Simple Nutrition. I think it's okay to admit that it's not that simple. And yeah, as a coach, it's your job to make it as simple as possible, but also to admit that there's a lot to it. And that's why we're here. You may not, understand all these things. And at the beginning, you don't need to. At the beginning, your athlete doesn't need to know necessarily about omega-6s and omega-3s if they're just starting out. Yeah. It's something that they should know. It's something that eventually they may want to incorporate into their food, into their diet, into their nutrition plan. But it can very quickly become overwhelming for people. And I think one of our jobs as coaches is to make it as, no pun intended, as palatable as possible, so that people can at least get started, and then we can build upon it as we go along.
Yeah, you want to start as a coach. You're not going to develop some kind of, I mean, I know coaches out there do it, I've done it before, where you build a meal plan for someone. It's a nightmare, by the way. I don't recommend it for anybody. If it's hard enough to do it for yourself, to do it for another person, it's, I don't recommend it. But with this, you want to help them start a foundation, and you want to instill in them the notion that this is where we're a starting point, and we want to gain consistency, but I'd never expect you to be perfect with it. It's going to be near impossible to be perfect with it. The people that are perfect with their diet and their nutrition are people like competitive bodybuilders or athletes at the highest of levels that have someone who, like, literally their personal chef is with them. And like, look at Matt Frazier, his wife was there cooking all of his meals and doing all of his meal prepping and doing all of his macros and all of that stuff. So that, in that case, if you want to be the best of the best in the top and compete at a high level, it should be pretty close to perfect. But that person also has less degrees of freedom than we do.
Yep.
in just the everyday life. Even with us just trying to maintain healthy lifestyles at this level that we're at right now, coaches and essentially recreational athletes, we can still be like, okay, I'm going to go to and have a couple drinks with friends, or okay, there's a cupcake in the office, I will or I won't. I will. Yeah. So, but you have the freedom to do that. Someone who's going to step out on stage, me and the Barbell Club are going out to the Arnold in next week. So we're going to see a lot of competitive bodybuilders and fitness athletes. And when you see these people in person, It's insane, Josh. Like, have you seen someone who's completely shredded and everything?
Never in person. Although that does beg the question, are they healthy?
Well, yeah, that's
That's a different conversation.
Yeah, that's a whole, like, whole different conversation.
Is that competitive bodybuilder who looks amazing, are they healthy?
Well, all right, the answer to that is probably not. They would admit that. Like, a lot of those guys, they're as weak as they could possibly be at showtime. They're so depleted. They're super dehydrated and dried out. But it's just to get that look, and that's their sport.
Oh, sure.
But the lifestyle they live throughout the rest of the year, special supplements aside,
how dare you, sir?
It's not only pretty healthy, and that's why everybody tries to mimic it, but it's super hard to do, and it requires an immense, one thing you got to give them, an immense level of discipline.
100%.
And man, if you could have just 60% of that discipline, imagine what it would do for you.
And I've seen videos of, you know, the Jay Cutlers and talking about food and how it's not enjoyable. I don't enjoy eating. I eat because it's like gassing up your car. You do it. I don't care what I put in my mouth. I put in my mouth fuel to help me do what I want to do. They don't eat for pleasure.
No,
they eat for work.
A lot of us eat for pleasure. You have this little treat at the end of the day, or you snack throughout the day. And really, you have to wonder, am I eating because I need sustenance right now? Am I eating for any kind of a purpose outside of, I'm actually bored?
Yeah.
I'm bored. There's just, I have nothing else to do. I got to eat this. And you've been conditioned to do it. You go to the movies, you got to have snacks to watch a movie. So you're going to watch a movie at your house, got to have some chips or something nearby. You know, like it gets conditioned and it's really hard to break. One thing, when I used to drive a lot, I developed a habit of, when I'm in the car, I snack. So like I would do very, very good all week. And then I would go for a long drive over the weekend. And I would always stop at the gas station and get a bunch of snacks. And that was the only time I would get those things, because I was doing hardcore paleo zone during the week, which we'll talk about the zone soon. But for some reason, it was like, well, this is snack time. And it was a hard habit to break, of not snacking in the car.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what you're dealing with. Everyone has their own blind spots, you know, when it comes to this. For me, it's late at night. It's late at night. You know, my wife's put my son to bed. Like, she's up there with him, and I'm in the kitchen, you know, doing the dishes, making my lunch for the next day. And if I'm in the kitchen at night, I'm probably going to try to eat something. And I've tried every trick in the book. I've tried chewing gum while I do it, just to keep myself occupied. I've tried brushing my teeth before I go into the kitchen, because I'm less likely to eat something if I just brush my teeth. Right? I've tried all the little tricks to.
I'm surprised that one doesn't work, actually.
It does to a point, but then once you cross that threshold, it doesn't matter. Like, you're like,
oh, like, I'll brush them again.
Right, that first bit of food was gross, tasted very minty, but nah, the next one will be fine. And then it's just whoop, down the slide.
So what we've both described in both of these situations, these are problems that these are not normal psychological relationships with food. Like, you should not have the food shouldn't have this hold over you, where and you shouldn't be so this nutrition is always such a tough, it's nutrition is like religion and politics, right? It's just, you never want to tell someone, I've learned this the hard way, don't eat that, or you can't eat that, or you shouldn't eat that. You have to, as a coach, you have to come around at it from a different angle, and they'll eventually, they'll realize the importance of doing it a certain way. But as soon as you try to tell someone you can't eat bread or blah, 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 there's going to be a huge issue. So like with leading them the right way, there's all this information to know. You just listed off all the different types of fats. And of course, we have those omega-6 fatty acids, which are known to be inflammatory. And you can have high omega-6 fatty acids in your diet by eating a lot of fatty meat and eating a lot of nuts. So even though you're eating things that aren't necessarily processed foods, you could still have a lot of this omega-6 fatty acid, which is prone to promoting inflammation in your body, which inflammation is a normal thing. Like when you work out, your body's going to be a little inflamed and then it heals. It's when it stops healing, or if it's chronic, that's when it starts to become a problem and it leads to other issues. But even right here, just giving your athlete the tools to start to make their way towards a whole foods diet and to start to leave some of those processed things by the wayside. Some will still be here and there. You're like, all right, you got to have your coffee creamer. Cool. You know, like whatever you have to do. But with this information, even though the nuts and the fatty meats and other things that are quote whole and paleo, they're going to have the same, you know, response. They're going to have those omega-6 fatty acids. You can still start to lead them down the right path and then try to get them more towards a balanced diet. Because when you have a balanced diet, it's not as much of an issue because you're going to have all these other food sources that are going to balance those sixes out with omega-3s.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing. And that was the thing that they really talked about early on, and I think was, you know, was pushed in. I mean, for most people, completely getting rid of one thing is tough. But having that balance, that and even the variety, forgetting about the fact that from a mental standpoint, having the, you know, same thing every meal every day is unsustainable. It's also you're missing out.
But I think most people though, like generally kind of do it. Like they fall into these are the things I know how to make. I know how to make a sandwich. I know how to pour a bowl of cereal, and then I know how to get McDonald's at the end of the night. Like it sounds not very good, but there's a level of consistency there when you kind of do that every single time. It's harder when you've got to be the one to make it and do the meal prepping and put in that extra bit of work.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And that's what this is. This is work. This is work. Just like going to the gym and working out is work. This is work as well. And you said it, the actual eating of the food, that's the easy part.
Yeah.
That's the easy part. We can all do that, right? And even if it's not your favorite food, we can all eat food. But it's the, you know, preparing the food. It's also the, you know, the planning of it. And not just the, you know, the buying of the food, but like thinking of these things. Like, well, what should I have this week? Well, what have I had this week? It's almost like putting out a program, a CrossFit program. Like, okay, well, what have we done already this week? What haven't we done this week? What should we do this week? What are we going to do next week? Starting to think about things like that. So you try to get as much as you can. That thought process is something that over time gets easier, certainly. But at the beginning, especially, it's tough.
Yeah. And that's why there's nothing wrong with, you know, more so with nutrition than with like a training program. Even though training programs can be very repetitive. In barbell club, we snatch, we clean jerk, we squat. You know, there's little variations. So instead of going from the floor, which is a sweet potato, we're going to do Yukon potatoes and go from the hips on Wednesday, you know, and we're going to do russet tomatoes on our potatoes on Monday and go from the knees. So same potato, different type of flavor. But if you want a pull-up, hanging from the pull-up bar is most people can do that. Not everybody, but that might be the easiest, most achievable part of the pull-up, just like eating the food. And then if you want to get your chin above the bar, well, this is going to require a lot more work. And it's just funny. It's like people see that work, the physical work, and are mentally okay with doing it versus this is the hard part. You know, when I get home, people tell me this all the time. When I get home, I'm doing nothing. I only do it here, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, you're kind of telling me you don't want to get better, like in some capacity. It's like, it might even just be stretches. I there's a lot of people where I'm like, it'd be great if you could do this at home too. And they're like, nope, I will only do it here. And it's like, why? Why are you so adamant that you will only do it here?
You will not sully my home time.
Yeah.
This is my couch palace. Stretch. This is my palace. I will not couch stretch here on my couch. I will sit on my couch only.
Yep. It's tough. So it's a long-term conversation and you don't want to beat people down with it. You don't want to turn people off from it. And you just have to meet people where they are and travel together from there. So we've got video 3, part 3. The main topics are vegetables, nuts and seeds, fruit, and starch. All of these are carbohydrates, and they're not only sources of carbohydrates, but they're also sources of macronutrients. And we don't really need carbs per se, you know, to survive. But if you're going to be doing high intensity exercise like CrossFit, because remember, we are talking overall, like our all roads still lead to CrossFit in this conversation and in your quest to be a level three coach, you know, everything is in the context of CrossFit. We use carbs for energy and we're going to need them to have, you know, to be effective in the gym and everything else that we're trying to do.
Yeah. And again, kind of like we said at part two last week, fat is not the enemy. Carbs aren't the enemy either. They've been vilified and they can be in, you know, if you don't watch out, if you don't, you know, manage that, same with fat, but carbs are not, you know, they're not inherently bad.
Yeah. Like, so there's a lot of talk right now. Like you have your carnivore diets, which is an extreme ketogenic style diet. I've done it before. It works very well. And you feel real, like I felt amazing when I did it. When I broke it, it made it harder to go back on it. And I did it in the strictest sense of the way, which it was only the steaks. So 1 to 2 ribeye steaks every single day. And I lost a lot of weight that way. My skin cleared up. My sense of smell improved a lot. I remember walking into a CVS and I could smell the candy aisle. And I was like, wow, like I can't believe how powerful that smell is. And then I was wondering, like, does anyone else smell this? Like I could just smell the sugar. It was insane. So it definitely works. It's a nice trick to do again if you need to cut weight for a competition or something and still feel strong, because I did feel strong on it, but it may not be the most realistic thing. And there are other types of carnivore diets out there now. You have the carnivore MD guy who he eats honey and fruit. And he explains, well, all right, vegetables are bad for you because of XYZ and fruits are good for you because of ABC. And if you want to know that stuff, you know, we don't need to cover that here, but he's got an Instagram channel, Carnivore MD. But it's like, if you're going to take someone, you know, you may know this stuff as a coach, right? I know these things as a coach. I know why I personally wouldn't want to eat broccoli, because the number one reason, Josh, is I hate to taste the broccoli. So I just don't want to eat things that I don't enjoy to eat. But then I also know the sciencey stuff that this guy and other people have put out. But if someone wants to eat broccoli, all right, I'd rather you eat broccoli than eat Oreo cookies. All right, this is there's going to be a
I would rather eat Oreo cookies than broccoli.
Yeah. Oreo sprinkled broccoli. But there's a hierarchy, you know. And okay, maybe we're going to find out one day that broccoli is really not the best. It's not the most optimal for your human meat machine and fuel source and all these things, but it's way, way better than a slice of bread, or especially a slice of white bread, which when I first started CrossFit, Josh, I would bring sandwiches to CrossFit and they lost their minds. And then I switched because I was a power lifter, you know, I was husky. I would just eat food. It's like, all right, I'm just eating food. But they're, and I'm like, all right, well, I'll get some wheat bread. So I brought in the wheat bread. And then they're like, well, you went from death to slower death. Good. So white bread to wheat
steps.
Bread.
Baby steps.
Yeah, baby steps. That was literally what was told to me. that was back in the day, and that was hardcore paleo. There was a person at the gym who was called Paleo Police. That was his nickname, and he was hard. I don't know if you've ever met as hardcore of a paleo person than this, but what are the things I'm thinking of here? It's like multiple tiers. You want something to be better or good, great, better, or something along those lines.
Sure. I got nothing here.
Yeah, I'm blanking on like what the quote is. I guess you go from good to great, right? Both of them will give you calories to live and still fuel for performance. But the broccoli in comparison to the Oreos is great, but maybe something else is better than the broccoli, you know. But you don't need to have people come up with some kind of complex over all of these foods, at least not in the beginning.
Yeah, and I think that's it. At the beginning, again,
that's going to bother me now. I can't remember that. That's
all right. You'll dial things in, and you'll find out what works. And go ahead, eat broccoli. Go. Good. Be you. Also, maybe live a little bit, but whatever. Fine. Have broccoli.
Yeah. Have the veggies, and it's not something that they need to do right away. And I know I've seen this out there in the wilds of the internet. Newer coaches who are receiving this information and become really dogmatic about it with the new stuff, you know, like the whatever is the popular thing. Okay, well, carnivore is the new fad diet thing right now, which it's not a fad. None of these things are a fad. That's a pet peeve of mine, where people are like, keto's a fad. Do you have any idea how long keto has been around or how people just naturally did that? Like, that's a whole nother rant podcast on labeling things fads that you don't like to try to diminish them when they really do the way they really do work. But I did this as a newer coach. I was, as soon as I found out about paleo, tried it. It worked a little bit, man. That was what everybody needed to do. No, Josh, put away those Oreos, get rid of them. There was no tact, no bedside manner with it. It was just all, and of course, look at the environment I was coming from. You know, death to slower death and what I was being taught. But it's that this is a problem, or not maybe a problem, but this is something that a newer coach who you find the new shiny thing and you just, it becomes the gospel really too soon. But really you can use all of the, you need to learn about all these different types of diets, and then you can start to use them as tools in different situations and to help people. It's just like knowing how to teach a snatch multiple different ways. Okay, well, now you have a huge tool bag to pull from, and you don't need to be married for one of them.
Yeah.
So we got veggies, nuts and seeds. These are sources of fat, protein, carbs, and micronutrients. The problem, not a problem, I keep saying a problem, but one of the things that EC brought up in the video with nuts and seeds is that these are incomplete sources of protein. Remember, we talked about complete and incomplete. These are incomplete because they're plant sources. So any protein that's coming from a plant source is going to be an incomplete source of protein, but they can still fill in the gaps in your diet.
Yeah, again, use them to add to your protein, but don't have them be your main source.
Yeah. And then they have some carbs, but not the main source. Fat, it's skewed towards polyunsaturated fats, which are higher in omega-6s. And but she did mention that walnuts and macadamia nuts are higher in omega-3s. So go walnuts.
Sure. Hey, you know where I like to put my grandfather used to like to put walnuts on his ice cream sundaes. So hey,
there, so you, yeah, go. So, you know, higher in omega-3. Mm-hmm. I like them when they're candied in a salad. Yeah, that's the why? Like, I don't understand salad culture. Like, we're going to put walnuts in the salad, but they're the candied walnuts. Yeah. It's like, but wait a minute. I feel like these two things don't go together. One of these is for fun, and the other one is leaves. So it's like,
it's a fun salad.
Yeah, it's a fun salad. I have this highlighted right here with nuts. You can still eat nuts, blend it into a balanced diet, but just keep in mind the omega-6 situation. So I've done this before where, all right, I'm going to, for my snacking, snack on nuts. And you end up eating an obscene amount of nuts. Or I used to buy the almonds that are in the shell, and you just crack them. And it's like, you're not going to just have four of those. You just keep cracking. So I have in the past eaten an obscene amount of nuts. Especially almonds, and I can see how that would cause issues.
Yep.
Actually, kind of interesting. When I was younger, I used to have pretty bad allergies in the spring. And that was around the time where I would do that, like get an entire bag of almonds and crack them, or hazelnuts and stuff like that, and eat. That was like, just if I'm bored, eating all the nuts. And I don't do that anymore. And I haven't had it, like a pollen issue in many, many years.
I didn't have a pollen issue until I moved to New York. And this place is awful.
Uh-oh. Well,
I'm allergic to upstate New York, is what I'm trying to say.
It's really it's the taxes and then the high cost of living. You got that first bill and then you start sneezing, you know, your return from the state in April or May. We got fruits. Fruits are carb sources with micronutrients. They break down to fructose and glucose. And she talks a lot about those. Fructose, the issue there is the body doesn't handle large doses very well. So if you were going to eat fruit, about 50 grams per day is the recommended max. And you can spike your insulin very high with some of these fruits as well. In the real life, a few pieces of fresh fruit per day is okay. But if you're eating lots of sugar and added sweeteners, you're going to be way over 50 grams. So I think that's, I have that highlighted because that's kind of just an important thing. You may be trying to eat healthy and you don't realize how all these little things compound together. You can't think about it as one meal at a time. Well, I only had one piece of fruit for breakfast. But you got to think about all the other carb sources throughout the day and all the little condiments and sweeteners. And it's all going to compound to be a high amount of carbs and sugar at the end of the day. You have to think about the day as a whole.
Yeah. And that's what's tricky because they're sneaky. They're sneaky. It's in things you wouldn't think.
Yeah. Let's see. On the topic of fruits, I have this highlighted. Olives, avocados, and coconuts. These are the fatty fruits. So they are fruits, but they're sources of fat. Olives and avocados are high in monounsaturated fats. And coconuts are sources of saturated fat, which if you remember, saturated fat is the most stable of the fats. And then monounsaturated fat is the next stable. And then you get into the poly issue. I don't eat olives a whole lot.
I don't like olives.
Yeah.
I don't care for them.
This show is anti-olive.
Yeah, don't care for them. Don't care for the green ones with little pimentos in there. No thanks. Don't care for the black ones. They're very salty. Don't care for olives. I just don't care for them. That's me.
Yeah. I didn't know. I never even thought about it that an olive is a fruit before this.
Yeah, I never really thought about it either. But then again, tomatoes, fruit too. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Look how weird it gets. But like looking at an olive on a table or a jar of them, I've never thought like, what is that? Because it's always been like, I'm not going to eat that ever. You know,
so, never given it any thought at all. I've been like, oh, gross. No, thanks.
Yeah. I'm like, it's not even a food to me. It's like, oh, get those little death marbles out of here. I'm not going to eat an olive. And then we have the little starch component of this. And EC goes over, you know, starch is a carb source. These are different types of glucose molecules. You're going to find starch in potatoes, veggies, grains, legumes. So not all paleo sources. And she just gives the recommendation to exclude them if you have allergies or an autoimmune response. And if you can handle them, keep them in. But just, again, you have to just have a balance and monitor the amount.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, goes on to talk about how it's more glucose than fructose, which is preferable as far as that's concerned. But again, and I think that's a, you know, foods aren't inherently good or bad in general.
Yeah.
And they get labeled as such, but
no olive ever robbed a bank.
It's true. Are you sure? Are you sure about that?
All right, maybe an olive. Yeah, I don't trust them. See, maybe that's the thing. They look like little eyes. I'm like, I don't trust you. You look a little shifty over there.
Wait, do you like grapes?
I love grapes.
Which also look like little eyes. I'm just saying, for the record, also look like little eyeballs.
Yeah, but they don't have that little red thing in the middle of it.
Well, that's just the green one. That's just the pimento. That's not even that's not even part of an olive. That's a whole different thing. That's a pimento.
Oh, well, you know what? I don't like pimentos either.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
What is a pimento?
I don't know. It's the little red thing.
I've
never thought about it before.
Hold on. I need to Google it. Is that right now someone's listening to this and like, you guys need to add more variety to your diets.
Apparently. What,
how do you spell pimento?
P-I-M-E-N-T-O, I believe.
Pimento cheese?
Yeah, there's pimento cheese, pimento loaf.
A pimento or, excuse me, I said that wrong. A pimiento or a pimento is a variety of large red heart-shaped chili pepper that measures 3 to 4 inches long and 2 to 3 inches wide.
So okay. Chili pepper shoved into a gross fruit.
And you know what? I'm not a chili pepper. I'll have green peppers and other peppers like in a chili or something, but I'm not really a pepper person by itself.
It's fair.
Okay. So now look at all the things we're learning so on much. This. You're going to take your level 3 exam and it's going to be a pimento is blank, blank, blank.
Guys, I know this one. I got this one, guys.
Yep. And this finishes out this video with EC talking about different, just giving a definition to autoimmune disease, which if you're a CrossFit coach or anyone in the health and fitness field, you should know this. You should know about the different types of diseases, heart disease, diabetes, type 1, type 2. What's the difference? What is that person going to be experiencing? What are good decisions or bad decisions? And then you're at the mercy of their doctor too. Like, so that's also another hard thing as a coach. The doctor's like, yeah, do X, Y, Z. And you're like, well, I don't know. It's not your place to say anything at that point, you know, unless you want to have, you could hurt someone. Or if the doctor's protected by a lot of layers of probably insurance, you're probably not. In fact, there's probably something in your insurance that says that you shouldn't, you know, tell someone not to take their medication because you're against the medication and it's not paleo. That's an extreme example, but let's bring it down to food. It's kind of the same thing. Like if they've already gotten that higher recommendation and there's a plan, just give them a good workout, get them fit, make sure they're adhering to the plan, because adhering to any kind of plan is going to yield some kind of results, right? You could have just like, you could have the worst program in the world. Well, if you work the program and you believe in it, it's still going to produce results. It may not be the most fun or flashy program. So even with most of these diets, if you work something, it's going to lead to some kind of results. And then there's people to help tailor it, you know?
Better, I dumb it down. It's better than nothing.
Yeah.
It's better than a bad CrossFit workout is better than no workout at all.
Yep. So an autoimmune disease is where the body can't distinguish between the protein in the food and its own body tissue, and it attacks itself. And some examples are rheumatoid arthritis, and diabetes has a autoimmune component to it too. So this is where the body's just like, it's all the same. It just starts shooting, just starts spraying, burn it all down. It's tough. So that is video 3. Any other comments or thoughts on video 3?
No, I think we covered that one good. Well,
cool. Video 4, the main topics are sugar, oils, alcohol, and dairy. And there's a little quote at the beginning of it from EC. She says, typically, wherever we see diseases of modern civilization, obesity, heart disease, cancer, we also see a consumption of sugar. And not too long ago, I believe it was on CrossFit's Instagram page, they posted the 100 words of fitness. And I think there was a little circle around the no sugar or something. Like someone woke up that day and chose violence, and it was awesome. And the amount of people, Josh, that lost their minds was amazing. You can still go back and find the comments and just read through it. And it's true. Of course, we need to live in the real world, but like those people just clearly don't get it. And it's like the people that don't get it and like hate on CrossFit and stuff like that. Why do you even follow the account? Like,
I mean, that's, you have a lot of free time. And even if you do follow the account, I don't comment on anything, like anything. Yeah. I just assume because I run part of our social media for the department I work for. And I assume people who are commenting are, you know, they are the extreme one way or the other. They are it's like the people who call into like sports talk radio shows. Like, this is not representative of the majority of people. These are outliers.
It's so easy to call in and complain. But if you had to be on the field, they're like, hey, Mr. Smith, We're going to put the headset on you. You call these plays. You're going to screw up that game.
You're peeing your pants right there. Just absolute evacuation.
100%. I wish there was a way to totally do that. Like all of those, like, what is it? A Monday morning quarterback, right?
Monday morning quarterback, yeah.
And they're bashing the decisions and all that stuff.
There was a play. This was a couple years ago, I think. The Chicago Bears were in the playoffs, and their kicker missed a makeable field goal, and everyone just destroyed him. And then a local radio station set up a crossbar and put, you know, it set it up so that it was the
distance that's amazing.
Of that, and had people come. And I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people, of fans, came and tried, and not a one of them made it. Maybe one or two made it, but 99.9% of people didn't even come close. It was like, oh yeah, I could make that. I don't know. What are we paying him for? I could make that. No, you couldn't. You couldn't.
It's like with coaching. You know, we've had so many people throughout the years who are like, oh, I could do this. I could stand in front of the whiteboard and I can lead this class and teach people stuff. All you're doing is just telling people to squat low and blah, blah, blah. And do you remember your first time standing in front of the board, having to give the whiteboard brief?
I do. That's a little shake in the voice.
Yeah,
hey guys.
It's, and of course, you know, anybody quote could do it. Anybody could try to kick the ball. Are you going to do it well? That's a whole other thing. Are you actually make the field goal, or are you going to hurt people? So yeah, it's just amazing. That was a special time. But sugar, carb source, glucose and fructose, and you know, you have your table sugar, which is going to be equal amounts of glucose and fructose. But then you have honey, which is going to be slightly higher in fructose. And then you have agave nectar that she mentioned. And it's funny, just I remember when agave nectar was like hit the market, so to say. It was like the thing. I used to have it in little sticks. You can get a little agave nectar stick. You clip it and I don't even know what I put it on. Oh, pancakes. That's right. So. No way. So it's like, all right, I'm going to make my pancakes healthier. I'm going to put agave nectar on my carb disc pancakes and
yes,
just do the maple syrup.
Everything about it. Yeah. I was going to say, get some natural, some real maple syrup. You're fine.
Yeah. This is back in 2005, 2006, when I was just discovering healthy eating at all tracking macros, which it looks like we're going to talk about video 5 next time.
Yeah.
Just because we're running out of time.
A quick aside, when I was in college, my freshman year, I was in Air Force ROTC, and I went to Northeastern in Boston. It was at Boston University. They didn't have Air Force at Northeastern, so I would go to BU and do that. Now, before the year started, they had what was called the FOP, Freshman Orientation Program. And, you know, basically all the newbies coming in, it wasn't like boot camp, but it was kind of a introduction into what was going to be happening. Well, it aligned so that those who went to BU while they were there would be able to move into their dorms. Northeastern happened to start, and a couple other schools, BC and Bridgewater State, that were there also. We didn't move in until a little bit later, like a week later. So for that day that they were all moving in, we just had the day off. And so 6 or 7 of us got on the T and went to a Bickford's, which is kind of like an IHOP. Bickford's was breakfast anytime. It's kind of like an IHOP. And, you know, we went there. We were all 18, 19 years old. We went there and we were just housing pancakes and such. And the way they did, now if you go to like an IHOP, they have all those like little, you know, containers of syrup. They didn't do that at Bickford's. At Bickford's, they would bring it to you in a small little pitcher that was about the size of a shot glass, and it was hot. It was hot syrup. Yeah, it was delightful. And we thought it would be fun.
Oh, no.
To do shots of it. And we did.
Oh, gosh. We
took the empties and made a tower. And there were 6 or 7 of us. And the thing was, it was hot. So when you were doing it, it would just coat the inside of your mouth and down your throat.
My stomach feels heavy now just thinking about it.
And there was one guy with us who wouldn't do it. And we're like, we're stupid kids. Like, come on, man, do it. And he goes, guys, I'm hypoglycemic. We're like, don't do it. Yeah, it's fine. You don't need to do it. But everyone was staring at us and laughing at us and silently hating us. And yeah, that was my
how many shots did you do?
Personally?
Yep.
One or two. I didn't do too many, one or two, but we had a nice little tower going by the end.
It would be so interesting to know your blood work, and like your resting glucose level or whatever it is before and after that.
It's not good. Not good. I don't recommend it. This is also right about the time Super Troopers came out, where they were drinking the maple syrup.
And amazing movie.
That's what it is. And that's what gave us the idea.
Okay.
But because they came in little shot glasses, it was like, oh my God, it's serendipitous. We need to.
Yeah. How can you not, really?
And we did. And yeah, that's my story. So, you know, no, apropos of nothing, I just thought I would tell that story because it's a good story.
I think it's a perfect story for the topic of sugar and all these things. Next, we got seed oils, high in polyunsaturated fats, omega-6. Sea oils, this is a hard one. It's like, this is almost like if you could, like, if you were going to vilify one thing, it's probably this. It's in everything.
Written on my piece of paper, vegetable oils are everywhere when you eat out.
Yes. Yep.
If you're trying to get rid of vegetable oils and you eat out, you're not. You're just not. It's even if you get that salad, and she was talking about how she gets, you know, oil and vinegar on the side and just doesn't use the oil and uses the vinegar, the likelihood that whatever is in that was cooked in some kind of vegetable oil is almost 100%.
Well, and also she said that she'll get the dressing on the side, but and she's asked restaurants, they will mix canola oil with olive oil to save money. So if you do like one part olive oil, two parts canola oil, just as an, I don't know if that works, just an example, you're going to save some money because olive oil is way more expensive than canola oil.
Sure. And, you know, and that's 100% that's happening. So my wife, she has found that she has an allergy to, and this took a long time to figure out, sunflower seed oil.
Ooh.
Which is very specific, but after mixing, and this took years to her to finally narrow it down, sunflower seed oil. And it is
everywhere.
I mean, things you wouldn't even think. Like she'll eat something and all of a sudden not feel great, and then look and be like, "Yeah, there it is." And it, I mean, it can be buried in there. But those types of things that's hard. That's tough. Yeah.
I do think that this is, if we were going to make like a four horsemen of the apocalypse, you know, evil type things, I think that seed oils is definitely one of those things where it's like, if you can definitely eliminate, you might find. So look at your wife as an example. If you could find and just eliminate seed oils everywhere from your diet, but most everything else stays the same, which I mean, coming with that, you're probably gonna have to eliminate a lot of processed food.
Yep.
But just with the mission of getting rid of seed oils, it's gonna go a long way. You might find you can breathe better, you have less hives, you know, you sleep better just because you're not having that constant low burn of inflammation response and allergies. And think about like a burner, like on a stove. You can have the heat up very, very high, which is go to the hospital, or you can have all the way down where it's just a little burn. That's a lot of people, that's reality. And you live like that with that slow burn every single day. And then what happens is, Josh, it becomes normal. You don't realize, like the slow burn has been going for so long. You don't realize that life and feeling better is actually an option until you get rid of that stuff. And you're like, oh my goodness, I can breathe. I feel like I can think better.
Makes it that much more frustrating that it is extremely difficult to do that.
Yeah.
And again, like we said there, when we go out to eat,
they use it in cosmetic things.
Yeah. When we go out to eat, my wife assumes that when we go out to eat, she's probably not going to feel great that night. That's just an assumption.
Yeah.
No matter what she gets, it's just an assumption that, yeah, I'm probably not going to feel great tonight or tomorrow morning.
Whole Foods, everything is cooked in some sort of a seed oil. You can't get rid of it.
Yeah. And so it's sneaky, and it is, that's tough. That's tough.
This was a major takeaway from this section. And even roasted nuts. She said that almost always roasted nuts are roasted in vegetable oils. So it's a double whammy of omega-6. The omega-6 is from the cashews themselves or whatever the nut is. And then you have the veggie oil. So it would be better to eat just the plain raw ones.
The raw ones, yeah.
But they're not as fun. It's the whole thing.
No, that's true. That's 100% true. My favorite part of this portion was, dairy gets a bit fuzzy, but if you can tolerate it, then go for it.
Yeah.
Dairy is weird. Dairy is either great and necessary and wonderful, or it is the devil.
The carnivore MD guy, he drinks raw milk. So he's not anti-milk, but he's like, do it raw. So it has all the stuff in it.
Yeah.
That's good.
And you know, there are many people who have, you know, allergies to it, who can't handle it. It's kind of like we said with you know, the starches. If you can handle it in moderation, then do that. Then do that. I do that. I put, you know.
I remember a friend of mine had a kid, and there was this debate with the doctor and all these things on dairy or no dairy. And they were told, if you have a dairy-free kid, then what's going to happen is they will develop the dairy allergy later on because they haven't grown up processing the dairy. And I think they've found that out with a lot of other things. I don't know the whole story on it. I should look it up a little more, and then maybe we could talk about it. But I think if it has something to do with the upbringing, if you have some things not in the diet, you can actually coax a peanut allergy or something to manifest later.
So if they want to get it out of their diet later, then that's fine. But
maybe do it early on.
Yeah, that's interesting. So
I guess it's kind of like if you, you get sick, so you develop an immunity. So your body knows what to do with that and it remembers it. But at a young age, if you've never been exposed to any dairy, you're just outside of breast milk. Or maybe you don't even do breast milk, you just do formula. So I don't know. There's just no dairy, completely dairy-free kid. When they get to be 20 and they're like, well, I want to have a milkshake, this might be an issue, or probably in their teens.
Yeah. Also, the other issue with being dairy-free is you don't get ice cream, and ice cream's the best.
Yes, yes.
I love it. I love it so much.
And then with dairy, do the test. Take it out for 30 days.
Yep.
Then have a glass of milk, whole milk. And if you're not in the toilet for hours on end,
immediately,
yeah, you're going to be okay. Almond milk and things like that, still processed, aim for unsweetened.
Yeah.
And then last thing we haven't talked about, I know you got to go here in a second, alcohol, carb source, fructose source. And we all know what fructose does. Yes, bad decision source. And the thing with the fructose is, and I wonder if this is more towards the wine or maybe even beer, I don't know. She didn't specify what types of alcohol. She just said alcohol. But excessive fructose intake can lead to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So this is one of those diseases coaches should know.
Yeah, I remember talking about that too. That felt a little extreme. I felt like I got to watch that one again because I wasn't sure how we got there.
How she got there?
Yeah, how she got to that, because that felt like a kind of a jump, because we're talking about like, okay, you shouldn't have too much fructose and it can make it look like you are a heavy alcoholic. It's like, whoa.
Well, yeah, well, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is a real thing. Sure. And it's not only alcohol that would do that. So if you are eating the standard American diet and having lots of processed foods, lots of fast foods, lots of Oreos, all these things, Snickers bars, and it's a huge component of your diet, then all of that fructose and all will you'll develop a liver that, if they looked at it, looks like the liver of someone who was an alcoholic. So there's two paths to get to this fatty liver disease.
Yeah.
It's one with alcohol, one with diet and lifestyle, or more than likely you're doing both.
A little bit from column A, a little bit from column B.
Yeah. And it's like, holy shit. Like, imagine what your liver looks like at that point. Yeah. So yeah, that would be something else to look into. But yeah, if Google images of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, it's not pretty. But it is.
Should I do that before or after lunch?
After. But it is reversible. It is reversible. And it depends on what you put in your diet. Like, Eggs are high in choline, which is a micronutrient, and choline helps to kind of, the term I've heard is cleave, you know, so like I'm using quotation marks right now. It helps to cleave off, you know, some of those fatty deposits and some of the issues with the fatty liver disease. So eggs.
I had scrambled eggs this morning.
Hey, there you go.
Feeling good.
Don't believe what they say in the news. Eggs won't kill you, but. That's all.
That depends on the week.
Yeah, it depends on the week. So, Josh, any closing thoughts on this last piece or anything that we've talked about today.
Yeah, and you know, the last thing, and it was kind of written in the description there, is, you know, think about food not necessarily as yes, no, but as more ideal, less ideal. Obviously, if you have...
That's what I was trying to say earlier, yeah. I think.
Obviously, if you have an allergic reaction to something, right, you know, then okay, that's different. But in general, it's, you know, there's a book that a long time ago was Eat This, Not That. And
I remember that book.
Yeah, and if you followed everything it said, look, is it going to make you the healthiest person in the world? No. But does it help you make better decisions? Potentially. And, you know, better this than that. Look, if you're going to have, you know, if you're going to, you know, I don't know, fall victim to your sweet tooth, then, you know, okay, probably not the best thing in the world for you, but it doesn't have to be the worst thing in the world for you either. We can make better decisions, even if they're not the best decisions, they're still better and they're steps in the right direction.
Yeah, I know for myself, I like to snack at night, you know, and... But it's, I want something sweet. And also I just want the work of chewing something and munching on something. It's more of like, I need something to do. So I've been getting, we were talking about earlier, I've been buying grapes and you know, they're sweet, but it's like this, not that. It's like, that's grapes better than M&Ms. Grapes are nature's M&Ms.
Hey, so I think someone described grapes as sugar bombs.
Sugar bombs. Yeah. Really?
Little sugar bombs. Yeah. Little sugar bombs. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, Eat This, Not That by David Zinczenko and Matt Golding. And you can find that book probably on Amazon. I've never read it before. I have heard about it. So that'd be...
I have it. I think I have it. They have a few of them. There's like a Buy This, Not That type of thing to help save money. There's a whole bunch of them. But I remember that one in particular being like, you know, it does give you some better options. Good options? Maybe not, but better. And when we're starting out, better is good. It's good. Yeah. Right. I mean, if I showed up and they were like, oh, that bread you're eating is going to kill you. Don't ever eat that. And like, I'm like, whoa, that seems pretty hardcore. I don't think I'm ready for that yet. You may get there. You may get to a point where you're like, now I'm dialing it in, but you got to be careful. You don't want to scare people away. You don't want to go too hardcore that someone's like, this is never gonna, I can't do this.
Yeah. The horror stories I could tell you.
Yeah, you can do it, but maybe you shouldn't do it right now. Maybe that's not sustainable right now. Maybe we'll get there, maybe we won't, but you know what? Every step is going to help and going to get us closer to maybe where we ultimately want to become, or maybe you should become.
Yep. It's a day-to-day thing. You have a rough day one day, you ate the Oreos, okay. Tomorrow, we'll try to do better. We'll just try to do better every day.
Yeah. One meal is not going to ruin your day. One day is not going to ruin your week. It's about not allowing that one day to blow everything up.
Yeah.
Which is a mental exercise more than anything else.
It is. Well, I'll put a link to that book in the show notes if anyone wants to check it out. And I'll have to send Matt Golding a bill.
Yeah, I think I have it. I gotta check to see if I do. If I do, I'll dig it up.
Yeah. Do a little skim through. Maybe it'll be something to talk about next time. And now next time we'll talk about the final part of this video series, which is all about the basics of the zone diet. And there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
with the zone diet. So this is actually working out pretty well. And we will eventually get to the muted hip after that.
Yeah, eventually. That's basically how I live my life. I'll eventually fix this. Eventually.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave this here as a little cliffhanger. I've been looking at ways, like, how do you correct a muted hip on a pull-up? Mm-hmm. Is there such a thing as a muted hip on a pull-up? And can you correct it? Yes and yes.
Okay, good.
And we can talk about that when we talk about the muted hip.
Outstanding.
Awesome.
Any predictions for this week? You were right on the toast bar. I was right on the wall balls.
Yep. So the only thing I got right was the toes to bar and some kind of pulling exercise from the floor. The time domain and everything didn't sync up. They didn't make the workout work with the cap workout at all.
No, we were 2-14 minutes versus what? It was 8-12.
8-12, yeah. I think that there will be, not this week, but next week, some like lunges and handstand walks and stuff like that. I think this week we'll see snatches and maybe snatches, double unders, pull-ups, something like that.
So I'm thinking dumbbell snatches, mm-hmm. because we do have a dumbbell as something we need. So either dumbbell snatches or dumbbell thrusters, depending on how devious they want to be. I do think double unders will be there this week.
Maybe this will be the first time they do a one-arm dumbbell thruster. Although, is the dumbbell thruster too similar to the wall ball we just did last week?
It could be. So maybe we move that to the following week. I mean, thrusters and double unders are the only two activities that have been in every single one.
Yeah.
Because last year they didn't have toes to bar, which knocked that off its pedestal.
I'm thinking, what did I say before? Snatches? Mm-hmm. Some sort of snatch. I won't commit either way to dumbbell or barbell, although I kind of think it'll be barbell power snatches. I think box jumps, and I wouldn't be surprised about some kind of a pull-up thing.
I'm going double unders, dumbbell snatches. That's all I got.
Could just be that. It doesn't have to be three. Could be two.
Oh, God. I'm sure there's more to it. I don't know. But those are the two that I think are going to be showing up.
Well, if they're going to use the box, maybe they're going to do burpee box jump overs. That's right, like the cool thing. They're going to do dumbbell step up overs. So you're going to have two uses out of the box, and you're going to have to do a bunch of dumbbell snatches too.
My knees hurt just thinking about that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll confirm soon enough. All right. Awesome, Josh. You still probably don't have an Instagram.
No,
you need to make one so you can get out there with the haters and comment on stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do.
Follow our gym, Albany CrossFit, on Instagram. Follow me, James A. McDermott, on Instagram. Check out Josh's website if for any professional works that might need to be done. But joshheller.com.
Josh-heller.com.
Josh-heller.com. And thank you so much for listening. We will continue this talk on nutrition next time.
Look forward to it.